world and everything in it is made possible by listeners like us. My name is Ruth Del Signore, and I live in Brookline, New Hampshire, with my husband Tim and our two children. My husband and I run a Christian wedding and portrait photography business called Covenant Photography, where we seek to glorify Christ and make Him known through our creative talents. I hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning. Elections have consequences. With a new governor in Virginia come new school rules giving parents the power to guide their gender-confused children.
Governor Youngkin has come in. There's a new set of guidelines that actually say, no, the parent ought to be the one that is in coordination with their child if their child is struggling over gender.
Also today, Britain has a new prime minister after just 45 days of his predecessors taking office. Plus, the power of the pen and the beauty of a pen well made.
They say the darker the grain, the older the wood. They're from the prunings of the olive trees in Israel.
And the priceless value of a friend.
It's Tuesday, October 25th. This is The World and Everything in It from listener-supported World Radio. I'm Mary Reichard.
And I'm Nick Eicher. Good morning.
Now the news with Kent Covington.
The incoming British Prime Minister has a tough job ahead. Rishi Sunak said Monday,
"The United Kingdom is a great country, but there is no doubt we face a profound economic challenge."
The Conservative Party named him on Monday as the successor to outgoing Prime Minister Liz Truss. He'll try to shore up a sliding economy while also attempting to unite a demoralized party. British political historian Nigel Fletcher says Prime Minister Liz Truss's failed economic plan put the party in a deep political hole.
The Conservative Party's support fell off a cliff when Liz Truss had that budget. And so the only way is up for Rishi Sunak.
Sunak is a former UK Treasury chief. At 42, he'll be the youngest prime minister in centuries. The Kremlin claimed on Monday that Ukraine is preparing to detonate a dirty bomb to force an escalation of the war. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov.
"We have concrete information regarding Ukrainian scientific institutes having technologies which allow them to make a dirty bomb."
Western countries say the claim that Ukraine would detonate a radiological weapon on its own soil is absurd and transparently false. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the Kremlin's accusations suggest that Russia is preparing to use such a weapon. Zelensky said, quote, "They understand who is the source of everything dirty that can be imagined in this war." Attorney General Merrick Garland called reporters to the Justice Department on Monday to announce charges against two suspected Chinese spies.
"Good afternoon. Over the past week, the Justice Department has taken several actions to disrupt criminal activity by individuals working on behalf of the government of the People's Republic of China."
The two men are accused of trying to obstruct a criminal investigation into Chinese tech giant Huawei. Garland said the defendants thought they had recruited a U.S. employee as an asset, but the person they recruited was actually a double agent working for the FBI. The department has issued arrest warrants for the pair, but it's not clear whether they'll ever be taken into custody. Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco said the charges unsealed this week fit a pattern of behavior by Beijing.
"That includes espionage, harassment, obstruction of our justice system, and unceasing efforts to steal sensitive U.S. technology."
The DOJ also charged 11 other Chinese defendants with various offenses. Families are grieving in St. Louis this morning after a gunman broke into a high school on Monday and shot 8 people, at least 2 of them fatally. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
"Our hearts go out to everyone impacted by the senseless violence, particularly those injured and killed, their families, as well as the first respondents."
The attack happened at Central Visual Performing Arts High School just after 9 a.m., forcing students to barricade doors and jump from windows. The city's police chief said a security guard and police officers ran to the gunfire and shot and killed the 20-year-old gunman before more people were hurt. Meantime, in Michigan, 16-year-old Ethan Crumbly wore an orange jumpsuit and shackles as he faced a judge on Monday after carrying out a school shooting last year. The teenager withdrew his intent to pursue an insanity defense and pleaded guilty to terrorism and the first-degree murder of 4 students.
"You understand the maximum possible penalties you face here? Yes, sir.
You understand that the maximum possible penalty you face here on the underlying offenses is up to life in prison?
Yes, sir.
That would be life in prison without the possibility of parole. And Crumbly may be called to testify against his parents, who have been jailed on manslaughter charges. They allegedly purchased the gun for their son. One of the former police officers involved in the death of George Floyd pleaded guilty on Monday. World's Kristen Flavin has more.
Just as the trial was about to begin for two former Minneapolis police officers, one of them pleaded guilty to aiding and abetting second-degree manslaughter. A plea deal for J. Alexander King calls for 3.5 years in prison, with prosecutors agreeing to drop a more serious charge. And his former colleague, To Tao, agreed to waive his right to jury trial in exchange for the state dropping a charge of aiding and abetting murder. A judge will now decide his fate on a charge of aiding and abetting manslaughter. During the 2020 incident, King kneeled on Floyd's back and Tao kept bystanders from intervening. Reporting for World, I'm Kristen Flavin.
A failing grade for the nation's report card as math and reading scores dropped in every state over the past year. The Education Department released the results of national standardized tests on Monday. Math saw the sharpest decline ever, while reading sank to its lowest level in 30 years. Peggy Carr with the National Center for Education Statistics.
What we're seeing is all students, regardless of their ability, they are declining in these data, particularly in mathematics. It is a serious wake-up call for us all.
Nearly 4 in 10 eighth graders failed to grasp basic math concepts, and not a single state saw a notable improvement in its average test scores. Officials blame the COVID-19 disruptions for the decline. I'm Kent Covington, and straight ahead, some Virginia schools are giving power back to the parents, plus a man who is passionate about pens. This is The World and Everything in It.
It's Tuesday, the 25th of October, 2022. You're listening to World Radio, and we're so glad you've joined us today. Good morning. I'm Mary Reichard.
And I'm Nick Eicher. First up on The World and Everything in It, transgender policies in school. The time for public comment ends tomorrow for new guidelines on transgender students in Virginia schools. Last month, when the guidelines were released, some students used the opportunity to walk out of class in protest. World's Lauren Dunn has the story.
Kayla Parker is a junior at Jefferson Forest High School in Bedford, Virginia, a district of about 9,000 students. In late September, some students at her school participated in a walkout.
Students missed fifth period for it, but the only thing was is that I think only about 30 people came to the walkout, and it was in our silo field right outside the school.
She says that only a few students from her class joined the walkout, though more students in a friend's class participated.
So many people came up to me and they were like, you should go to it. It's for a good cause. And it was definitely, it felt forced.
Parker has disagreed with some of her classmates on this issue before. Last year, some students alienated her for her views, calling her transphobic. She took a few months off and homeschooled, in part because of the conflict with her classmates. The walkout at Parker School was small, but schools across Virginia reported hundreds of students leaving class to participate. Some of them carried signs or chanted slogans.
Trans rights are human rights! Trans rights are human rights!
Governor Glenn Youngkin released the model guidelines on transgender students after repealing an earlier set of rules that his predecessor proposed. Victoria Cobb is the president of Family Foundation of Virginia. Here she talks about those previous guidelines.
They really endorse the idea of deceiving parents. So if Johnny felt like he was Susie within the school building, they said in order to respect Johnny, but they'd say we were going to refer to Johnny as Susie and treat him as Susie within the school building, but to respect his parents, that's how they would word it. We will refer to Johnny as Johnny and they will, you know, will treat him as a biological male with his parents.
The previous guidelines also required schools to allow students to use whichever restroom they chose, regardless of their biological sex. In contrast, the new guidelines would require teachers to use students' given names and the pronouns that correspond to their biological sex, unless a parent agreed in writing to another name or pronouns. Students would only use the restroom that corresponds with their biological sex if a student who identifies as transgender wants to use a different restroom. Schools may grant access to a single-user restroom.
Governor Youngkin has come in. There's a new Board of Education. That new board has, you know, the folks have put together a new set of guidelines that actually say, no, the parent ought to be the driver. The parent ought to be the one that is in coordination with their child if their child is struggling over gender.
Technically, these model guidelines are exactly that, guidelines. But the Virginia legislature passed a law in 2020 that requires school districts to adopt policies that match or go beyond the state's model policies. But then and now, schools don't always follow suit. In early October, the Richmond School District announced it would not follow the model guidelines. Other districts, like Fairfax County, issued statements in support of transgender students, but they haven't officially said whether they will follow the state's model.
The local school board has the authority over children and really shouldn't be getting required directives in great, great detail from the state. And so even though we wish there weren't cities and counties rejecting these guidelines, we do believe they have the authority to do that.
Student walkouts mostly occurred on one September Tuesday, and Cobb says even those demonstrations were smaller than their organizers had hoped. But the new policies clearly stirred up Virginians. While the previous set of policies garnered 9,000 public comments during its comment period, Governor Youngkin's raked in 60,000 as of last week. Joel Thornton is the chief operating officer and litigation counsel for Child and Parental Rights Campaign.
What's significant about his policies is that this is one of the first state boards or state departments of education around the country that are really trying to approach this in a neutral, from a neutral standpoint. In other words, they're working to protect the rights of all the students in the school and not just concerned about the rights of the transgender students.
Thornton says that the state guidance can protect schools that want to protect students.
It gives the schools some knowledge of what the state views as the right direction for policies to go. It gives them cover.
Kayla Parker returned to her school last December, and she says other students haven't called her transphobic. She says she's really close with a few other students who also took a break from the school environment last year. Parker knows that if her school adopts the proposed policies, some students at her school will be affected.
There are definitely certain students that won't tell their parents because of the backlash that they would get from them. And they are very hush-hush about it, but everybody at school knows that they are transgender.
She hopes that the new policies will push schools to help students who are confused about their gender.
I think that a lot of the students are confused, and especially, I mean, being teenagers, you don't really know what you want.
Reporting for World, I'm Lauren Dunn.
Coming up next on The World and Everything in It, Britain's next prime minister, Rishi Sunak. Sunak had already run for Britain's top job and was runner-up, but then he got another shot and the chance to say, I told you so.
Right. Sunak is the former Chancellor of the Exchequer. That's a fancy English way of saying Treasury Chief. Liz Truss beat him in the contest to replace Boris Johnson, who also resigned as prime minister. But Truss managed to pack her turbulent term in office into a mere 45 days. Johnson briefly attempted a comeback but bailed out, and that left Sunak out front. He won the race yesterday to become leader of the Conservative Party. Today is the day he takes office, and to put it mildly, he faces many challenges. Here now to talk about it is Glenn Doerr. He's originally from the UK, and he teaches international studies at Cedarville University.
Professor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, let's talk about the process in the United Kingdom. It's not like in the United States where we elect a president who stays there for 4 years. Prime ministers seem to come and go a lot more frequently in the UK. Help us understand the process of selecting a head of state.
It's very complex in the parliamentary system, really depends on the country, and also depends on the political party. It can shift. Even the contest earlier this summer to the one we just saw, within the Conservative Party, they've been radically different in terms of a timeline and how the member was selected as prime minister. So it really can depend on circumstance. But the big issue in the UK and parliamentary systems is a vote of non-confidence, which can remove a prime minister very, very rapidly, either from within one's own party or from the outside. Or in a case like we just saw, there's a resignation and then an opportunity for new members of parliament to try and become that prime minister. So we've actually seen a whole bunch of different ways, even very recently. The parliamentary system can be very stable if we think through Margaret Thatcher, John Major, and Tony Blair. They were in for a cumulative almost 29 years between the three of them. And yet, even in this year, 2022, we've seen three prime ministers as well in Rishi Sunak, Liz Truss, and Boris Johnson. So it really depends on the time and the circumstance and the political issues at hand.
Well, Liz Truss is going to go down in the history books for something I'm sure she doesn't want to be known for, and that is the shortest ever term for British prime minister. Professor, what went wrong for Liz Truss?
You have to go back to 1827 with Prime Minister George Canning, who served for about 4 months to get anywhere close. And so you're absolutely right. It is a very difficult distinction. But it's also worth noting in the parliamentary system that once career is not over, she could plausibly come back. She could plausibly serve in the cabinet again. So the advice to Liz Truss is keep going. Legacies can be changed as well. But in terms of what went wrong, the Conservative Party's been in power since 2010. So that's a part of it. It's a deeply, deeply divided party. There's a very, very centrist faction, and there's a very populist, rightist Brexit faction of the party. And the two have often competed. Boris Johnson was probably the star member of the Brexit wing. And Liz Truss was maybe something between the two. She ended up saying that she supported Brexit very, very heavily, but she actually voted against it in 2016. And when she came to power early in the summer, part of her challenge was facing everything that we face here in the United States. We're still at the end of COVID. Inflation is very high in the UK. It's above 10%. And they're still trying to figure out Brexit. The Scottish National Party is still knocking on the door to have a second independence referendum. There are issues between Ireland and Northern Ireland. And so there's just a massive amount that's on the desk of the prime minister. And what she put in place was a mini budget that was supposed to slash taxes, especially for the wealthiest, pretty significantly. And it was kind of in the mold of Thatcher supply-side economics to grow the economy and to grow the tax base. But it requires some patience and some pain to do that. And she opted to take a U-turn after being warned by the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, of some £45 billion in unfunded tax cuts. And there were also some conversations with other world leaders who warned her. And so she took a U-turn, basically walking back some of the promises she'd made. And what ended up happening is she lost the core support of her major supporters and those within the kind of centrist faction within the Conservative Party didn't trust her either. You couple that with a number of high-profile resignations, the Home Secretary, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, two very powerful cabinet positions in the United Kingdom. And it ended up that the writing was on the wall for her to resign.
Yeah, so many things piled up. Well, we mentioned that Rishi Sunak is a former Treasury chief in London. What else can you tell us about the next prime minister?
He's 42 years old. He'll be the youngest prime minister in over 100 years. But the punchline doesn't really reveal everything because both Tony Blair and David Cameron were 43 when they entered office. So it's not like it's completely different. But he is a brand new generation. Born in 1980, he's the very end of Generation X, right before we get into the millennial generation. So that's going to be a big shift. He is one of the wealthiest Britons. His wife is the daughter of one of the founders of Infosys, one of the largest companies in the world that was founded in India in the high-tech sector. He also attended Stanford University for his MBA, so he's lived in the United States and by many reports is very USA-friendly and in all likelihood will have a good relationship with the United States and will look to maintain the special relationship between the UK and the United States. He's only been an MP since 2015, which is a surprise. Normally, one has to serve for a lot longer, usually decades, to get into power within a party and then to become the prime minister. He achieved that in only 7 years. And as you mentioned, he was the kind of equivalent of the Secretary of the Treasury, what's called the Chancellor of the Exchequer. It's the second most powerful position in the UK government in terms of what one can do. And he was the person that rolled out the budgets for Prime Minister Boris Johnson. And he's typically been viewed as very, very popular as a result of that. But again, with the factions within the party, he was supposed to cut taxes. But then with the COVID issues, ended up, like in the United States, putting a lot of government monies to keeping businesses afloat. And so he's gained a fair bit of populist popularity. But the hardcore supporters of conservative economic tenets tend to view him with mistrust. So he's going to try and glue those factions back together upon being appointed as prime minister.
Glenn Doerr is professor of international studies at Cedarville University. Professor, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Additional support comes from Dort University. With outstanding academic programs and a Christ-centered community, Dort is best experienced in person. More at dort.edu/visit. From The Light FM, a radio ministry founded by Billy Graham, featuring contemporary Christian music and sound Bible teaching. More at thelightfm.org/world. And from Ambassadors Impact Network, which provides growth financing for businesses led by Christ followers who winsomely make Jesus known in their lives and work. More at ambassadorsimpact.com.
Well, we're a little less than 2 weeks away from fallback time, that change from daylight saving time to standard time and a blissful extra hour of wonderful sleep. But it turns out the federal government has been oversleeping for years. An Inspector General report says no single government agency has one single authoritative map for where America's time zones actually fall. The IG's office says that several sources of time info on the Department of Transportation website were wrong. So now the DOT is setting out to fix things with an official DOT time zone map. Here's hoping everyone's agreed on a deadline for the task, because you just can't miss deadlines. It's the world and everything in it.
Today is Tuesday, October 25th. Thank you for turning to World Radio to help start your day. Good morning. I'm Mary Reichert.
And I'm Nick Eicher. Coming next on The World and Everything In It, The Power of the Pen. A famous quote, often attributed to Martin Luther, says, "If you want to change the world, pick up your pen and write." But which writing instrument, the ballpoint pen, the fountain pen, the rollerball pen, might not matter to some people, but today World reporter Jenny Ruff has a story of a man to whom it matters a great deal.
I'm supposed to bring that up to close.
You got the cobras and the elephants and the owls and the scorpions, dolphins and the sea turtles.
Paul Morin is surrounded by animals, not life-sized creatures. They're pen-sized. Morin owns a little shop in Jonesboro, Tennessee, called Paul's Pens, Odds, and Ends.
I am a pen maker. Yeah, these are all handmade, handcrafted one at a time by me.
His theme pens are a big hit.
This actually glows in the dark. It has the phases of the moon and the compass coordinates on it. I have skulls and dragons and bullet pens.
Morin makes his bullet pens from an actual bullet cartridge. On one, the click action of the pen works like a bolt action on a rifle, as if you're chambering a round. Another pen slides to open in a movement that mimics a Colt 1911. not into guns? No problem. Whatever your interests, quirks, or preferences, Morin probably has a pen to match it. Everything from scuba diving to aromatherapy.
Yeah, there's a little wick that comes with the pen when you buy it. You stick those wicks inside essential oils. They absorb the oil.
Slide the wick in the ink chamber, screw on the cap, and start working.
So then when you write, if you like eucalyptus, you'll smell eucalyptus all day long.
Fountain pens are also popular.
Yep, they will actually wear to your hand, so it becomes your pen. It's very personal.
But believe it or not, Morin's favorite pen is a Bic.
Absolutely. People laugh at me because I own a pen store, and I love Bic pens. And these are just, they're very inexpensive. You can buy 100 of them at Walmart.
He's designed a series of pens that act just like one.
Looks like the Bic pen, acts like the Bic pen, and actually uses the refill from the Bic pen. So it's an upgrade. It's not just a basic gray plastic. You have all different types. You have maple and black ebony and curly maple and African Padauk. It's a classy Bic pen.
Morin has noticed the way a person's job often dictates his or her pen preference. Medical doctors and EMTs usually don't like twist pens because they take two hands to open and close. They prefer click pens, easy to operate with one hand while holding a prescription pad or clipboard with the other. Slip it back into your pocket, no spilled ink. Speaking of ink,
blue ink, usually if you're a realtor or lawyer or something like that.
When signing contracts, blue ink more easily distinguishes an original document from a photocopy. For years, Morin drove trucks for a living. He'd only tinker around with pen making when he had extra time. But in 2014, Morin came off the road for good. That's when his wife suggested turning his hobby into his livelihood.
I mean, I have to be honest. I always tell people, I had to apologize to my wife. It was her idea. I thought she was kind of a little bit crazy. I figured we're in a world with computers and laptops and iPhones, and who wants a pen? But boy, was I surprised.
Morin's workshop is attached to his retail store. He says it takes him about 40 minutes to make a simple pen, but a complex pen can take hours. He starts by selecting the material, wood or acrylics. Then he cuts, drills, and trims the body of the pen. Next, he uses a lathe to chisel it down further. The smell of red elm fills his workshop, along with shavings and dust. Next comes sanding, polishing, and finishing. When Morin first opened his shop, he thought he had a brilliant idea. Sell pens with a story. For example, an olive wood pen designed for pastors.
This is made with Bethlehem olive wood. They say the darker the grain, the older the wood. They're from the prunings of the olive trees in Israel.
Pens with a story. But
the strangest thing that's happened over the years is that kind of failed. What has taken its place was pens with your story.
Here's what Morin means. Years ago, a little girl's family house burned down, so the girl moved in with her aunt. The aunt's house wasn't modern, and she often told the girl, "Don't forget to lock the door." The lock was a stick that the girl would slip into a slot and twist. Years later, when the aunt's house was torn down, the girl, now a grown woman, came to Morin with that stick. When she came to his shop to pick it up, she began to cry.
And I'm talking full-blown tears. Emotion like I have never seen before that I never thought would happen with a pen.
Morin had to go find some Kleenex.
She said, "I got DNA in this wood. I've got splinters. I bled on this thing."
A pen to one person, a priceless heirloom to another, like a pen he made from an old treehouse. Morin also remembers the day a firefighter came in.
A firefighter that was in the Gatlinburg fires. This is a firefighter pen, and it's got an axe. Okay. But the firefighter came in, brought me his axe handle. They almost died in the fire. They had to dig him out. So I took the handle, and I made him some firefighter pens.
As a Christian, Morin takes his inspiration from Jesus, the ultimate storyteller, one who spoke truth through stories to communicate in a deep and meaningful way.
In the simplest forms, in the simplest ways, in ways that they understood, in ways we can still understand today.
parables, beatitudes, sermons, and prayers meticulously written down by scribes with a quill pen. Reporting for World, I'm Jenny Ruff in Jonesboro, Tennessee.
Today is Tuesday, October 25th. Good morning. This is The World and Everything in It from listener-supported World Radio. I'm Nick Eicher.
And I'm Mary Reichard. It's often said that true friendship is seen through the heart and not through the eyes. Here's World commentator Steve West.
When I arrived at the restaurant for lunch today, Lena waved me to the left where my friend was waiting, standing to honor me. A rare thing for a man to do for a man today. We've been meeting this way weekly for over 35 years. That's just over 1,800 lunches. And allowing $10 per lunch, that's over $18,000 I've spent on lunch with him. He's worth it. Not every man has a friend like this. We fall easily into conversation, moving from family to work to faith. The salad and pizza are good, but only a backdrop for mutual encouragement, laughter, and on occasion, an easy silence. The interstices of knowing nothing needs to be said. I don't remember how our rapport came about, other than by circumstance and practice, by deliberateness and death. Death to self, that is. To have a true friend, you have to give up rights at some point and accept the privilege of being inconvenienced, of sharing burdens, of listening to someone's voice other than your own. True friendship is God's editor, chipping away at my old self and cheering on the new. C.S. Lewis said that in friendship, we think we have chosen our peers. In reality, a few years difference in the dates of our births, a few more miles between certain houses, the choice of one university instead of another, the accident of a topic being raised or not raised at a first meeting, any of these chances might have kept us apart. But for a Christian, there are, strictly speaking, no chances. A secret master of ceremonies has been at work. Christ, who said to the disciples, "Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you," can truly say to every group of Christian friends, "You have not chosen one another, but I have chosen you for one another." The friendship is not a reward for our discriminating and good taste in finding one another out. It is the instrument by which God reveals to each of us the beauties of others. I accept the bill this time, and he will do so next time. Yet we do not keep track. We owe each other nothing but the debt of love. We walk to his car, and he sits there while I lean in and we pray, mostly in his easy and honest eloquence, a brother with a brother. Whether on sidewalks, in cars, or walking away, we always pray, a period to our time, a paragraph and a story not yet finished. Good friendships, like Lewis speaks of, are providential, a mystery of sovereignty and free choice. Wilbur Wright, one of the Wright brothers, once humorously hinted at this interplay. Wright said, "If I were giving a young man advice as to how he might succeed in life, I would say to him, pick out a good father and mother and begin life in Ohio." But of course, you don't choose those things. And yet, there is a way that you do. By taking hold of what circumstance brings you, by digging in and sinking roots, even in the soil of friendship, a long conversation in one place. I'm Steve West.
Tomorrow, the president's recent release of oil from the Strategic Reserve. Was it interference in the elections or is it something else? Plus, we'll visit Biosphere 2 and hear what they're learning today. That and more tomorrow. I'm Nick Eicher.
And I'm Mary Reichard. The world and everything in it comes to you from World Radio. World's mission is biblically objective journalism that informs, educates, and inspires. The Bible says there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Go now, in grace and peace.